We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 24. Shout out to Kobe Bryant, the Black Mamba. We love you. We miss you. Rest in peace to him and Gigi and all the other survivors. Definitely thought about him when preparing episode 24. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mintinc_USA. We had another pair of great IG lives this past weekend. We had one on Friday with Ponji Barnes, our episode 7 guest out of Chicago. Her Instagram is at Real Estate and Chill. She answered a whole lot of questions, spoke about Section 8, spoke about different things to consider while investing in this current market. So it's really good to bring our followers together and expose my followers to the past guests on more of a personal level where they can ask questions that they had. So that was awesome. And then on Sunday, we had one with DeAndre McDonald, who was our guest on episode 14. She spoke about money management and getting your finances together for real estate. And then we kind of just broke out into another Q&A. So that was very successful as well. We'll continue doing as many as we can while we're all home during this coronavirus, just to make sure we're continuing to connect, just to make sure we're continuing to learn with one another and continue to grow. And we also hit 4,000 followers, which is great. Shout out to you all for supporting us. I just want to continue to learn and grow. And to celebrate, I'm partnering with DeAndre on a special offer. So she has a house hacking 101 course and a landlord ebook available, but she's offering it to our followers for $40 off. And so it's the first link in our link tree, but you can also find it in the show notes below. All you have to do is enter code 4000 to get $40 off. It's for a limited time, for a limited number of people. So if you're interested, definitely get on that as soon as possible. Also, don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It will help us move up in the rankings and reach more people. We're also on Twitter, at Bred Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there. I'm able to get in more of like one-on-one conversations throughout the day with followers. It's a lot easier sometimes to communicate there than Instagram. Also, we're accepting show sponsorship. So if you're interested in sponsoring a show, send me a DM, send me an email, and we can talk more about it. We're also offering paid Instagram posts. So if you have a course, a product, et cetera, that will be valuable to our audience. There's a link you can fill out in the show notes, also in our link tree to sign up for that. We also have multiple resources, of course, in the show notes and link tree that will help you on your journey to real estate investment. I really do my best to create partnerships and advertise courses of others who I trust and who I know are doing great work, so my audience can have all the best resources. So definitely take advantage of those. If you have questions about any one of them, definitely feel free to hit me up. Also, sign up for our email list. You'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter. And lastly, feel free to grab a shirt. We've been selling quite a lot as of late. You can find our shirt at gum.co/bread, also in the show notes in our link tree. It comes with a free home buyer dictionary from Jacqueline Sims, who is my friend and who's also a realtor. So I know y'all get a lot out of this episode with Legacy Home Solutions. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Very excited for this interview today. With me, I have Marion Lee out of San Francisco, California. Marion, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
For sure, for sure. So to start off, just tell us a bit about who you are.
Real estate investor, still 9 to 5 or so, doing double duty. I grew up in Southern California, about 45 minutes east of LA, Inland Empire, Pomona. I went to grad back in on East Coast at Hampton, but got into real estate investing about 4 or 5 years ago. 5 years ago, kind of started with the wholesaling thing, did a couple of wholesale deals. Hopped into the rental game after that, so started building that portfolio. In between there, done a couple flips, so I'm on both sides right now. The 9 to 5er, real estate investor, doing both of them right now, but it's working out. Keeping busy.
I'm sure. So tell us more about your childhood, and tell us about what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
Yeah. Childhood, I grew up middle class, I'll say, like blue collar family, pops worked, my mom worked. We were never like hurting for anything, but we weren't like balling. So wealth, we didn't really see or talk about wealth. It was a thing like, pops went to work every day and just kind of grinded it out. He's always had like the stay away from credit cards. He's the type of person that will save up for months and then drop cash on something. But wealth, we never really talked about wealth. And I think even now, like my parents aren't really invested in anything or nothing like that. Like they're one of those people that are going to kind of ride out retirement. My dad's in retirement age. Both of my parents are in retirement age. So retirement, social security, and that's kind of their plan. So I didn't see a whole bunch of wealth. I think in my household, I think when I got a little bit older, around middle school and high school, I started seeing a little bit of it from my best friend's parents. So growing up, I say like I had my rich dad and I had my poor dad, like real life out of the book. So I think that is anything where I saw like an example of like wealth creation and wealth building was from my best friend's dad, which I call like my rich dad.
Great, tell us more about your rich dad.
My rich dad, he's a dentist. So, and I remember like one of the first things we even started talking about, we were on a trip. It was a father-son retreat with the church. It was me, my rich dad, and my best friend. And we were out on a boat, like on a fish, like fishing on a lake or a pond. And his dad was reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad then.
Wow.
And we asked him about it, what is this? And he was like, I'm reading his book, and basically from this, he was telling my best friend at the time, he was like, just because your sister's got a brand new car, you're probably not going to get a brand new car. And we were like, what? So that's where it started to kind of understand that, like, well, cars are depreciating assets. And he kind of started explaining that to us and explaining just investments in general, what he was learning from that book. I met my best friend in seventh grade, so it had to be like 13 years old, and he's kind of telling us that. And then just seeing the way that they lived, because we lived in like two different worlds. I think that was like my eye-opening experience around like wealth creation and just like taking care of your family on a different level and using and learning different things to help your family and changing. It's okay to change, right? So my best friend's older siblings received brand new cars, but he was like, don't get me wrong, he had a nice car, but it wasn't like brand new like his sibling. So I think that was my first example of seeing that. And then they've always been like, since then I still have a relationship with my best friend. So I always tell his parents, like, you guys really transformed and changed my life, because seeing you guys is just seeing something different than where I grew up. Like, by no means am I saying my parents were bad. Like, my parents are great. They just didn't have the same exposure were able to give me the exposure that my rich dad and my rich parents, if you will, were able to. So.
For sure. It's very interesting. It's very interesting that you were able to have both of those experiences as a kid. Just, you know, your parents, everyday people working hard and doing the best they can and, you know, doing what they need to do, the best they know how to do. And then having your friends' parents and just seeing a different kind of lifestyle, a different kind of mentality. I'm sure it impacted you as you grew up.
Oh, like changed my life. I always say like they changed my life because I would go on their family vacations and just that and traveling and seeing them and like it changed my life. I say travel in general changes life and they started changing my life with travel and just seeing them. So life changing.
For sure. For sure. So why real estate? Why did you decide that real estate would be one of the vehicles by which you would start to build wealth?
As far as I can remember, I've always liked real estate. So it started off with like the flip this house with like Armando. This is like OG flipping shows. So, and I was, again, around that middle school, early high school age. And I saw that and I liked that. I thought it was cool. Just seeing that was cool. And then I had another friend, her dad was into real estate. So I'll never forget. He took me to a house. He was walking and he was kind of just showing me all the plays and how they like flipped that house. And he had a pretty big portfolio. He was telling me about his portfolio. So it's always just been a thing for me. And then I remember being like when I was in undergrad, just like this real estate is going to be my play. And I always just thought it was cool. I didn't think of it as like a wealth vehicle. And I didn't actually see it as a wealth vehicle until after my first rental property. And I started like trying to grow and get more. And I figured out the real power behind it and the wealth that can be created. So originally it wasn't even a wealth creation play for me. It was just something that I saw people making money from. And I thought it was cool. Once I started getting onto the buy and hold side, I realized the power behind it and the wealth creation that can come from it. So real estate has always been my thing. And then now I'm understanding how far it can really take me and like my family. So it's one of the most powerful tools that you hear about how everyone has real estate. So that's why I'm like staying in it and kind of growing in that area.
For sure. For sure. So talk to us about what that first investment looked like, that first purchase.
I almost didn't buy it. I had a couple false starts. So my first property I ever even like, got under contract, I ended up backing out of after the inspection. I forget exactly why, but I got pretty far down the process. But the first one I actually closed on, I had put it under contract. I got the inspection back. And just being new, a lot of the stuff in the inspection scared me. So they weren't willing to come down on the price and I was scared. So I ended up backing out, used my inspection contingency, backed off the deal. After that, it was still on the market. I think they dropped the price a little bit and I was like, all right, they didn't want to drop it when I asked for it. But after it sat a while, they dropped it and I was able to go back and get it. So I went back and got it. It was a 3-1, it's what I typically buy, 3-1, about 900 square feet. It was in pretty good shape, so I ended up putting about 15 grand in it and was able to cash flow. This is actually my best cash flowing property, so that's going to be in the portfolio for a while. But yeah, that was my first one.
For sure. And what was so you mentioned that you backed out initially due to the inspection. Did they, whatever was wrong, did they fix it? And before they dropped the price, or how did that whole situation work out for you?
No, so it didn't fix anything. It was a home pass. So a home pass property is just kind of as is. But the price drop that they did just on their own kind of put it into my like range of having to fix what I saw and exactly what it was. I don't remember, but that price drop made it a good deal. So, they didn't do anything, but just that reduction helped me out a lot. And then I think I talked to my father-in-law about it, and I was showing him and talking to him a lot about a lot of the things in the report, and he was like, that's not a big deal. You can fix that, or that's not that expensive. So I think those are the two things that helped me kind of get through that first deal was the price reduction and then kind of just talking to somebody that has been around construction and knows what like the cost of things are.
For sure, for sure. And what was that? Was that in Hampton, Virginia, or somewhere else?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No, that's in Hampton. So my first deal was clear across the country, and that's where everything is. So I think I can get to like everything in my portfolio is probably like 10 minutes from each other. So.
Got you. Got you. And what was it like being on the opposite coast during that whole process? What was that experience like for you, especially being a new investor?
So that first one, I actually spent a lot of time there. So closing, flew out for closing. Okay. Did the closing there. And then the rehab was only a couple weeks because it was in pretty good shape. So I stayed there for, I think, like a week and a half, 2 weeks to actually watch a lot of the work get done. I was making Home Depot runs. I don't do that now, but being that first one, being nervous and just not knowing what to expect, I was there that whole tour, like 50% of the time. And then once I came back, a lot of phone calls, a lot of FaceTimes, and a lot of like anxiousness. I was nervous. This is the first time I spent like thousands of dollars, and it's just across the country. So it was very, very nerve-wracking until that one got done.
For sure. And what was the purchase price on that first property?
45,000. So it was like all in like 60 grand after rehab.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think there's a couple of things I want to pull out of that first deal. I think one, you know, you just have the courage to say, you know what, you know, I went to school in this area. I want to buy something here, and you made it work. You know, you made it work. You were able to go out there and check on it and things of that nature. And now you're at a point where it seems like you have a team on the ground and you have a system going. But I think, you know, what I want a lot of people to know is your market may be too expensive for what you're trying to do at a particular time, but that doesn't mean you can't invest out of state, you know? So I think it's great. And what was it like managing the rehab as a new investor as well? Because you mentioned you put about 15K into it.
Yeah. That was nerve-wracking as well. I think the thing that helped me is my 9-to-5 job. So I'm a consultant, but a lot of consulting is like project management within the project. So I applied a lot of the principles that I use in my day job to managing the rehab. So having a schedule, having regular check-ins. Big thing was just like payments and milestones. So you're not getting any money until these things are done. So it was nerve wracking just because it's new and it's like my money. Now when I'm managing projects at work, it's a little bit different, but having that background, definitely helped me a lot. And then I think I have been reading and studying. So that experience that I already had with my job and then what I've learned through reading, I think helped me. But still very nerve-wracking. First time, like $15,000 now. Like I've done rehabs like 4 times that now, but then it's a big deal. So I think just relying on the skill that I already had and the knowledge that I've attained was kind of like what got me through, but it was a nerve-wracking for sure.
I'm sure it was. I can tell. But I mean, I think it's great that you pushed through that. You know, you were new, you knew enough to get to the finish line, but you persisted and you just figured it out, you know? And I think it's okay to be nervous, right? Like, even if you're buying something that's across the street from your apartment, it's a nerve-wracking experience. It's a big deal buying a house, whether you're living in or investment property. But I really do think it's very cool how you kind of just use what you had to get it done. So that's definitely very cool. And so where did your portfolio go from there?
So from there, I knew like I used a lot of all the capital I had in that one. So I was like, I gotta figure something out. So I brought in a partner and we were going to purchase another rental. It ended up going sideways actually. So that was probably the second worst or worst deal that I've actually ended up doing. But
what happened with that one? If you don't mind.
I think it was partly partnership, wasn't a great fit in the partnership, and then just expectation setting. So going in, I knew somebody I went to school with, and I was like, hey, I know you're a student in real estate. I've done this one. I want to do another one. Like, let's partner. And she was all for it, but I think we had different mindsets and different ways of doing things. I learned a lot from her, but I'm willing to spend the money to get the results. She's way more budget conscious. So we ended up kind of skimping on some stuff because it would be an extra $300 here, extra $200 there. And so she was like, we're already over budget. We can't spend any more money. So I think that hurt us on the rehab, which hurt us on getting people in the door to look at it. And then I think on that too, we priced it too high. So we both thought we can get a little bit higher than we could for rent. And then when we weren't able to rent it, we couldn't agree on how low to drop the price. So we stayed stubborn on kind of keeping it too high. And then and then we were just like, let's sell it. Like, this not going good, let's just sell it. And we ended up sitting on it for close to a year before we actually sold it. So I think it was just all bad from there. But around that same time, I purchased another rental by myself. And that's when I started using like private money. So private money, I think, has really helped me grow my portfolio, is working with private investors. So I think I bought that one on like a Thursday, and I closed on the other one like a Monday. And that second rental property that I held for myself is really what kind of pushed me and kept me going. But that was, again, I used private investors for that one. So no one kind of in the deal with me, and I could spend the way I wanted to spend and kind of get that one done. And I think that is what really kind of springboarded me into growing the portfolio, was that second deal that I did by myself and finding out and leveraging the power of private investors.
For sure.
I'm big on private investors because there's so much money around, and if you have the right network, some people have $5,000, $10,000 sitting around that if you give them the right terms, they'll lend to you to do a deal. And that's what I've been able to do, is tap into my network and find those little pockets of money and people that see what I'm doing and believe in me. And that's how I've gotten to grow the portfolio like I have so far.
For sure. For sure. Can you talk to us more about how you work with private investors? It's something that a lot of listeners have shown interest in. People in general, it's something they're very interested in, just finding other sources of money, because sometimes on your own, you may not have everything you need. So we'd love to learn more about how you work with private investors.
Yeah, so good. I read a book on it. So once I read it, was it Raising Private Money by it's by Bigger Pockets, David Green. I think it's David Green, but it's a Bigger Pockets book, but it's on raising private money. And it really just starts, the whole book, the book starts with like, you start with like your people around you, your core. So I went to one of my boys and I was like, I know he had a good job. And I was like, look, this is what I'm doing. Do you want to kind of put in on this? And he agreed. And that's what got me started. And now a lot of the people that I have as private investors, a lot of them, I would say majority of them, are people that I've gone to school with, like went to undergrad with. They have decent jobs, they're making a decent money, and they've seen the work that I've done. So I think a lot of it, I think, is building a brand. So I think if you refer to a lot of people that know me or like my friend group, like I'm the real estate guy. So part of me, like being the real estate guy, posting about what I'm doing, posting properties that I've, like I have already, people believe in it and they see the outcomes. So I think that with my personal brand, just people knowing me from school and knowing, hey, he was an all right student, he has an all right job already. So I'm pretty good steward over just financials and business. So that's all I've been able to raise money. And then I offer people that invest with me like 12% on their money. So the way I structure my deals is lend me the money based on a promissory note, 12% paid out. And then I either, if I'm selling, if I'm flipping, pay them out when I flip it, or if I'm going to keep it as a rental and refinancing it, they get paid out their principal when I finish that part of the transaction. But I think that's been, again, been the piece that's really helped me grow, is having those private investors around to help me do that.
For sure. For sure. And I also like how you post about, how you talk about, not post about, building a brand. I'm thinking about Instagram. You know, I feel like as Black people, we are not taught self-promotion all the time. And, you know, a lot of us will be better off, generally speaking, overall, real estate especially, if we tell people about what we're doing. You know, if we tell our friends or those around us, those in our network, if we post about it on different platforms, whatever platforms we're on, And I find that opportunities come to you. Money comes to you when you put things out, you know? So I think it's very cool. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the only way for people to know. And I think that's a skill, like you mentioned it, and having it in real estate, but it's something that I learned from my corporate job, right? Like, if you're not your biggest advocate, no one's going to be a bigger fan for you than you. So I think that's another transferable skill that I took from the corporate world and applied to the real estate business to really grow it. So absolutely, absolutely. You have to be your own biggest fan because no one's going to cheer louder than you for yourself. So 100% agree.
100%. For sure. For sure. It's interesting. I think that's the second time you mentioned that there was a skill from your 9-to-5 that transferred to real estate. So first you mentioned just the project management side of your day job, mm-hmm. helping with, you know, rehabs and keeping people on schedule and such, and being a good steward of the finances, and then also promoting yourself. So something else that I want to pull out for the listeners is that, you know, try your best to think about your day job, whether you're a teacher, whether you are a janitor, whatever you are, there is a way that can go into what you're doing outside of work, whether it's real estate or other ventures. You know, we're hired to do our job for a reason. So that means we have skills that can, you know, going out into the world and be beneficial to us.
100%.
Definitely. So can you just with fake numbers, can you go through an example of what it would look like with an investment partner on a property that you plan to refinance, and like what the steps would be for that? I think it would definitely be valuable for our listeners just to have an example of what a transaction like that could look like.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one that I've actually done to give some context on that one. So I'm trying to give you real numbers. So this is one that I actually have. 60K, purchase price was 60K, another home path property. This one, again, was in decent shape, so I only put about $8,000 into it. So all in about 68. So I used a mixture of private money and hard money to purchase. So I had few promissory notes or like private deals with people that totaled to about $9,000 I put into my own money. So it gets me up to $12,000 on my closing costs to secure the property. My hard money lender financed that like $8,000 rehab. And then I have to hold the property for 6 months. So during that time, I believe I had three 3,000 notes on that one to get to that $9,000. So those three people are receiving $30 a month from me while I'm holding that capital for 6 months. I think I ended up holding it for about 8 months. So they're getting their monthly payments while I'm holding. And then I was able to cash out on that one. I think it appraised for 123. So was able to pull out about 90 grand on value there. So was able to get the 68 I had in it, flip that, pay off my hard money lender, and pay off those private lenders and take the difference. And I put in another deal, possibly I forgot what I did with it, but they received their principal back once I refinanced it. So they received payments, it's like 1% of whatever they invest monthly, and then they get cashed out. So that's like a real deal.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. Do you find yourself going to the same people over and over? Or
because you're making them money, right? So yeah. It's like, why fix it if it's broke? So yeah, a lot of the people that I've invested with they've invested multiple times. I've even had one investor, I returned her capital the first time, she came back like 10x on her next investment. So I think it's one of the things, like, it's mutually beneficial, right? Like, I'm able to do and kind of run my business, and they're able to earn money while they're not doing anything with it. So I think that's why they come back and they keep working, and it's 12%, so it's a pretty decent return. So yeah, I would say more return than not return, let's put it that way.
For sure. And you mentioned in the beginning that you were very hands-on and present during your first deal, so there for the rehab, going to Home Depot, there for closing and all those things. How how do you currently, and it seems as though now you do more of it remotely. Can you talk about how you manage everything from California in Virginia?
Yeah, like you, it's not a whole process. So start with just securing the contract and agreeing on the scope of work. I think that helps a lot to just have everything in writing. And then breaking out the scope of work into draws so we know, hey, you're going to get paid when you do this, this, and this. I've gone a step further and broke out like a weekly schedule to say, okay, this week we're going to do demo, paint prep, whatever else, like drywall. And so I build a schedule and then have a phone call and review that schedule. So, okay, week one, this is what we're going to do. Week two, you should be here. This is when a draw will happen. Week three, so on and so forth. So kind of a lot of the upfront planning, I think, makes it a little bit easier. This is like lesson how to learn this on the hard way. So that's how we get it started. And then once we're rolling, I try to check in like once or twice a week. So usually like a Wednesday and a Friday, I try to hop on a video call with the contractor to kind of walk it. I have my realtor out there, so she's really hands-on and helps me a lot. She'll stop by and walk a property and kind of tell me what's going on. I also have my best friend that lives in that market. So if I'm not feeling like something's right, I'll just be like, hey, can you just go by and take a look at this? And he helps me take a look at like a lot of things like that too. And then a lot of it is like once the draws happen, once we get to a certain point, releasing those draws, that's what makes me comfortable doing it for so far. I know I'm only going to get in so far and lose so much money if it comes to that. And then once we wrap up, we do a final walkthrough and then release that final draw. One thing that also helps me too is I use a mix of private and hard money, and my hard money lender walks the projects before he releases a draw. So if something's not right, he's gonna not even release the money for me, which I'm not able to release to the contractor. So that's another safeguard I have in place is him looking at the project, and he's also done flips himself, so he knows what to look for as well.
For sure, for sure. And I really like the fact that there's a lot of things I like about what you just shared. The first is just having boots on the ground. So I currently live in LA area, of course. I invest in Ohio. And so I'm sure you hear the same, like, you're crazy. How could you own property and you can't be there every day? You can't drive by. And what I try to tell people is if you have boots on the ground, you'll be fine. You know, if you have boots on the ground, if you have a team in place, if you have processes in place, measures of accountability, if you have a way to figure out what you need to figure out what you need to figure out along the way, it can be done. So I like that you mentioned it very specifically, the process you have in place, because it's possible. You know, you can live anywhere in this country and invest somewhere else if you so choose, as long as you have boots on the ground. You know, I have someone, I mean, on Bigger Pockets, drive by every once in a while just to make sure things are going well. But that's just one small example. You know, you kind of laid out everything for us, but it's very possible. You know, you kind of took some bumps in the beginning, but now you have everything set in place to make sure you're protected, your investors are protected, and so forth.
Yeah, I think that too, and you mentioned like a team, like that's on the rehab side, but once I self-manage from across the country too, so a lot of people have property managers. I chose to start managing my own properties just to kind of understand it, and then once I started doing it, I was like, oh, I'm not paying them to do this. So I think that helps too. Having the boots on the ground helps. And then having a team. So like if something breaks, I know I have a list of four or five people that I call depending on what's broken to go fix that. So the combination of boots on the ground and kind of building a team makes real estate investing from a distance real easy. It's literally at this point, most times just text messages for me. You can probably attest, like it's not as bad as it seems at first. Once you get in it, it's easy, or easier than you think, because it's never that easy. So I don't want to put that out there to make it seem like this is a cakewalk, but it gets better.
For sure. And where? How many doors do you have right now over in Hampton?
Currently seven.
Got it. And so you mentioned that you self-manage. Tell us more about that. What's that like, and how do you make it work for you?
It's not bad. So a lot of the pre-screen and like showing of the properties, when I first started, I was working with a different realtor. He didn't do the showing, so I would have my best friend that's in the market just kind of show the property. People, as they're seeing a rental price, takes like 5 minutes. They walk in, walk out. So he was doing a lot of those showings for me. Now my realtor does them for me, so she does all the showings. If they like the property, I will get their email address, and I've set up the application as a Google form. So I just send them the Google form. The responses come back to me, and then I start my pre-screening process there. Big thing for me in the pre-screening process is talking to previous landlords. They'll tell you the truth. So talk to the previous landlord, and if that reference checks out good, I'll send them a link for a credit and background check. I use Smart Move for that. And then once that comes back, if everything's solid, I approve them. They'll go ahead and get my realtor their deposit in their first month. She takes that, and then she'll also facilitate the lease signing process for me. So she signs the lease, gets the deposit, and then sends me the deposit and the signed lease. And we'll go meet them on move-in day, give them the keys. And yeah, once they're in the system, they've moved in, I set them up. I use Cozy to manage, so cozy.co. So they pay rent, all the tenants pay rent online. And if nothing's broken, I don't hear from them. And then one thing I've realized early too is when you start communicating with tenants, I communicate with them via email. I don't call or text them. And I've learned that if you start with email communication, once they move in, they'll keep emailing you and they won't call you or text you. So that, I think, helps me a lot because it kind of manages the anxiety. Like early on, I would get tenant calls and it would just like ruin my day because I couldn't fix it. And I was like, this is broken. But now I have them email me so I can get to the email when I want to. And yeah, most times they pay rent online. If they're late, Cozy automatically adds a late fee. And then I do all that online. So it's really easy to do, especially again, I mentioned having a team. So if something breaks, that a few text messages away from getting fixed. But Cozy and my realtor are like lifesavers on like managing from a distance.
For sure. For sure. I can tell you're a systems guy.
Absolutely. Again, I think it's another thing that comes from like my corporate job, right? Like I work with processes all the time and systems. So that's another thing that's translated into like my business, but it just simplifies life. It makes it real simple.
Definitely, definitely. And what has been your most challenging tenant experience that you can remember, if you have one?
I think I've been really, really lucky.
Wow.
Really lucky. I think I had one tenant that kind of like got I'll tell the story. So I think it was her AC had went out. It was her AC in like the back bedroom. So it's not even like the main AC, it's like in a sunroom, had gone out. And at this time, this tenant was habitually late paying her rent. So she would, again, due on the first period to the fifth, she would always be like the 10th before she paid. And she, something had gone out and I was like, all right, I'm trying to get someone out there. Like just, I think summer ACs, like everyone's having the same issue. And it took me a little bit longer than I would have liked and she would have liked to get someone out there. And she sent me a pretty aggressive text message like, this is not how you should do things and I pay my rent and da 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 da. And I was like looking at my phone like, you're the same person that doesn't pay on time. So I hopped on the phone with her like, look, I got your message and I'm dealing, like I'm going to take care of it. But just because you think I should do it in a certain time period, it doesn't work like that. So it hasn't like, and we had that conversation and things worked out. I was able to fix it, whatever it was, and things have worked out. She's still with me, renewed her lease after that. But I think that, and probably most recently, I had a tenant. She's moving out, and I'm trying to show the unit before she moves out, so I don't have that vacancy period. And she emailed me. I told her, like, hey, you know, we want to show the property, whatever. She was like, okay. She gave me a time that worked. And then she emailed me back and was like, hey, you know, I really don't want people in the house. I got my lease in on this date. Like, after I move out, you can show the property. I emailed her back. Like, she referenced her lease during that in her email. I emailed her back, like, in that same lease that you're referencing, it says that I can enter the property when I want with enough notice. So me asking you is a courtesy. This isn't a necessity. So I had to have that conversation. But over, like, other than that, I haven't had bad tenant experiences. And it's really just those little things. But all in all, like, that's not bad from what I've heard other people's stories.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's definitely some nightmares stories we've heard. Awesome. Can you tell us more about the Hampton, Virginia market and why you decided to invest there and why you continue to invest there?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that I like about the Hampton market. There's a pretty big military presence there. Like, there's across the water, there's Norfolk, which is a pretty big Navy base. So there's a military presence. There's Hampton University, so there's a pretty big college there. And then there's a pretty big hospital that's in the city. And then you have, like, the shipyard where they build ships is right there in Newport News. So Hampton's not far from Newport News. So it has a lot of industries that support having a market. And then just the housing value there. So I mentioned, like, my first deal was 45. I think the second one I mentioned was, like, 60. I think the most I've spent on a property in a buy and hold situation has been, like, 75. So it's a very affordable market. And then basically on having all those different industries there, there's a pretty strong rental market there. So I picked Hampton because I went to school there and I just liked the area and I wanted to rent to students. Coincidentally, none of my tenants have been students, but the industries around and in that city just support a good rental base. So that's why I stayed there. That's why I went there, and that's why I stay there. Supported well.
For sure, for sure. And what does your wife think of everything that's going on real estate wise?
She just lets it flow. She understands what's going on, but she's like, that's your thing. So if I need her to step in and, like, help me with something, I think she has a really good eye for, like, colors and design and things like that. So I bounce a lot of ideas off of her and, like, ask her about different things. But for the most part, she just lets me run with it and listens to me and complain, if I'm, for lack of a better word, about what's going on. So, yeah, she doesn't get too involved in it, but she's like a nice silent partner.
For sure. For sure. And what are conversations like now with your rich dad?
It's actually funny because I was talking to my best friend. He was like, my family's thinking about doing, like, a family investing. I want you to talk to them. So it's interesting now kind of how it's flipped, because their investments have been on the more traditional stock side. And so now that I have the experience, my friend wants to bring me in. So it's like total 180, like, not say 180, but it's a different dynamic now. It's really cool to kind of have that, like, 180 and flip of roles. But he's still very supportive, still the same. It's just, you know, a little bit different. So it's still cool. But they're down in SoCal. So since I moved to the Bay, it's been a little bit different, and I don't see him as much anymore. But still the same. It's just kind of that remote relationship, and the tables have turned a little bit.
Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. You know, in the beginning, you were just this bright-eyed kid just being exposed to a different kind of lifestyle with your best friend and his family, where you're like, wow, you know, people actually do these things, and now you're at a point where they want you to help them. Isn't that crazy?
Exactly. Wow. It's really crazy. And it's just, I think, one of those things, like, people learn and they have, like, their niches. Like, I'm not a big stock guy. I can't talk to you a lot about stocks, but that's, like, his thing. That's where he invested. So it's really interesting how you can pick a niche, kind of develop, again, a brand in that niche, and then people that you've always respected start respecting you for your knowledge and experience.
For sure, for sure. And so let's say there's someone who's a new investor, they're interested in real estate, they heard real estate is is the way to go, is something that's cool to get into, but they don't know where to start. And on top of that, they're very fearful of what could go wrong. What would you say? What are a couple of things you would say to someone in that situation?
Learn the numbers, because like there's all, to me, all real estate investing is like basic algebra, right? If you can do basic algebra, you can successfully invest in real estate. So I would say learn the numbers on like how to calculate ARV, learn how to calculate rehab costs, learn how to calculate if you're going to refinance, or if you're going to sell, what that looks like. The numbers are what will give you security to move forward. I gave this example to someone before. It's like, if you knew, like, you know what 2 + 2 is. If I asked you that and I said, well, bet me $100 that you can answer that question right, you would do it. Just like, so if you know your numbers, you're willing to bet on that because you know the things will work out in the numbers. So I would say if you learn the numbers, and then that will remove the fear or anxiety around taking those first steps because the numbers make sense. So yeah, I think that's it. Learn the numbers and you can ease a lot of the fear that you have to get started.
For sure. For sure. And what does the future look like? What do you hope to get into and grow towards in real estate?
Funny, I kind of recently set this like a new goal. So my goal, I want to do 6 doors for the next like 5 consecutive quarters. So that's what I want to do. I think to do that, I'm going to have to hop into the multifamily. Everything I have now is single family. So for sure, by the end of the year, I need to hit 18 units by the end of the year. One of those for sure is going to be a small apartment complex, 6 to 10 units, and then kind of just keep that same progression for the next 5 quarters. And then I think if I've calculated everything right, my numbers are right, I'll be able to kind of exit the corporate world and go full time on the real estate side. So that's the goal, is to kind of grow at that pace for the next 5 quarters so we can make that exit beginning of Q4 2021.
Excellent. 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 Very, very planned out. I can't wait till we should do an update. We should do an update after that and see where things are. Very cool. Very cool. And you planning for that in the Hampton area as well?
Yeah, I've looked at the Hampton side of the water, so it's all Hampton's around water. Mm-hmm. It's not as many multifamily options, but I've started looking at Norfolk, which is right across the water, Newport mm-hmm. News. I'm expanding in that same area. Yeah, so that's, I want to try to keep everything there. I'm open to different markets. I've started looking at a different Midwest market. But it's really just me kind of starting to do some preliminary work there. So we'll see. I think I'm open to leaving. Just kind of figure it out.
Definitely. Just out of curiosity, what Midwest markets have you been browsing?
I was looking at St. Louis.
Okay.
Yeah. So looking at St. Louis is the market that I was looking at. I know someone that like I've talked to and like kind of helped him get started. He's in that market. He was like, it's great. Same things I liked about Hampton, that market has industry, it has the purchase price that can kind of make me comfortable. So, and strong rental base. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Haven't done anything there yet. Just kind of doing some research right now.
For sure. For sure. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
No, I think we hit on a lot of it. I think if it's you're looking to get started, just do it. Education, educate yourself. I'm not saying just do it in blindness, but get the education, learn the numbers, and you know, take the leap. There's plenty of free resources out there. There's plenty of paid resources out there. So if you want to get started, do it. I think it's very powerful. You always hear like your first deal like changes your life. I agree. So get one, even if you like, just figure out one. You don't have to try to figure out everything. Figure out one. Once you see that first check from rent, you'll be even more motivated and you'll figure it out. So just learn the numbers, get education, get started. And then there's a community. Like once you get started, there's a community around that I help you kind of grow that. So That's really it.
For sure. And what do you have any? Are there any books or resources that have helped you out that you think our audience should look into?
I'm a big fan of the Bigger Pockets like Suite. So they have, what really made me comfortable was the book on real estate investing and the book on managing rental properties. I bought them as like a pack. And then there's a book on raising private money that really helped me break out and start raising private money. There's a book on real estate investing at a long distance. I read that book after I started, but a lot of what I was already doing was in that book. So reassurance that other people think that's the right path and the right way to do things. And then I think there's a lot of power and a lot of good inspiration that comes from podcasts. Listening to podcasts, because the way I do things, someone else may do it differently. And you can just pick up pieces and tidbits from listening to different podcasts. Like, you're listening to this show, so they're on the right path of doing that. But reading those books and then listening to podcasts, because everyone's going to give you a different piece of the game, and you can just start putting all the pieces together, and you have your own game. You can run your own game off those pieces.
For sure. This was definitely a great interview. A lot of good advice here. A lot of good good things to pick up from here. The main thing that stuck out to me, a couple of things. So the first was just using some of your skills that you've built from your 9-to-5 and applying it to real estate was one. And also, I think it's an inspiration just seeing, you know, you were exposed to a different kind of lifestyle from your friend's father, your rich dad, and now you're on the other side where, you know, they helped you so much and changed your life, and now they might consult with you for a family investment in real estate, which I think is amazing. So definitely a lot of good nuggets in here. Can't wait to see how you do over the next couple quarters. Definitely keep me updated. You know, we got to do an update once you hit that milestone. Maybe we'll do one in the middle to see how things are going. Marion, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on today.
Not a problem, man. Thank you for having me. And yeah, we'll definitely do that update. Like, give me like 6 to 9 months. I'll have something good to share.
That sounds good to me. Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast at BRED Podcast. Look forward to talking to you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.